Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and the needle in my haystack. It's Dave Vitti.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get these pod things from. Dave, mate, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you? I'm liking the slick back hair, Jason, and the sterling beard. It looks good.
Do you know what? I'm gravitating towards Swiss Tony on a daily basis.
Do you know, it's funny you should say that, because only the other day, you know the way on Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that, you get these clips of the old TV shows, and there was one of Swiss Tony came up. And it was so, and I completely forgotten how funny it was. And he was talking about, well, in fact, you know what? I can't really compare what he was talking about, because it was very much of its time and it's probably not broadcastable in the current day and age. But you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. So our guest today, he's an old pal of mine who just happens to own some of my favourite cars in the whole wide world. He's a farmer, he's a motoring journalist, he's a car collector, and despite not looking like it, he's also a massive YouTuber. You most probably know him from his handle on the YouTube as Harry's Garage. It is, of course, Mr. Harry Metcalf. How are you, pal?
Hello, good, very good to see you again. It's been a while.
It has been a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's been a long while.
Well, listen, Harry, welcome. We're delighted to have you on the show. Big fans of Harry's Garage on YouTube. You, like many people that we have as guests on this show, know Jason and have known Jason for many years. He's that kind of person. You know, many people in the motoring industry in Thames Valley Police, they're all familiar with his work over the years. But so I'm going to start off with a common opening gambit to say, where did your paths first cross and where?
I think it was very early Evo days, because Jason, did you drive Williams, where Williams were doing Renault touring cars?
Yes.
And yes, somehow we ended up with Evo on the car for doing a little
absolutely
bit editorial.
Yeah.
And I seem to remember that was the first time we
it
met
was,
up.
It was, yes, back 1997.
97, when we were for October 98, that's when Evo started. I reckon it's from then. So it's a while, yes, I have to say.
Just thinking back to that, in 97, I know that Top Gear, they Top Gear magazine sponsored the car. And in 98 and 99, I'm pretty sure it was Evo. You're right,
yeah,
it was.
No, it was. It was on the side. And I think there was a fight with Autocar. They wanted it as well. When we had, I can't remember, but I know we've got these pictures of Evo on the car. We didn't pay anything for it. All we had to do was write good things to say, yeah, Jay, he's just amazing. That so bloody quick, unbelievable, and all that sort of rubbish.
Yeah. I tell you what, though, Frank, God bless him, probably wasn't across that deal, because nothing goes FOC with Frank.
No. Well, we had to do a fair bit of editorial, but it was a quick car, yeah, wasn't it? I think it was good that year.
It was a great car, yeah. Alamenu won. He was my teammate. He won in 97, which is my first year. I ended up coming third in the championship, missing out on second by 1 point, which was Alan's fault, actually.
But not that it niggles you 10 years on to happen to remember this.
I'm fine with it now. But, you know, great days. I miss those days. I think of them, you know, really far fondly, actually, because that, you know, that was my big break.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Early on. I'll tell you another time we met up, and it was good, really good fun, and that was in Germany, and Race of Champions 2010, and
yes,
I was doing something with Michael Schumacher, and there was that crazy party the night before.
Do you remember?
I do.
Yeah.
And you were telling me
the pants came flying off.
That's it. And Michael was just crazy at that party, wasn't he? And he found this new neat trick.
Jason, you've said that about Schumacher before, though, haven't you? Because actually, you know, the perception of him has always been this very, very measured, very sort of quite calculating and clinical. And I made this with the greatest compliment. But you sort of said that actually behind the scenes, he's a real character, isn't he?
Oh, absolute fruitcake. You know, loves. Yeah. I mean, you know, a wee bit like me, any mischief, he was right in the middle of it. And the more naughty it was, the more he was excited. I mean, this ripping, you know, trousers off. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
He'd found a way, hadn't he, to rip at the back pocket or something in your jeans. That's cutting it up, didn't they? Mm.
Yeah, and you ended up with a pair of chaps.
Yeah. I did ask him about why he was like that. Just going quickly on Michael, I asked why you're not like this on screen, Michael. I'm seeing a very different. And he said every single sort of syllable of every word I said is analysed to death. So I almost didn't open my mouth. So when he knows there's no mics around and he's just with mates, he was fantastic.
That makes total sense, doesn't it? As you say, because if he's living in that world where he knows that everything that he utters is a sort of a press release or a piece of copy or something, then it must get to the point where you just think, you know what, it's just easier for me to just do the bare minimum.
Yeah.
And then once the tape recorders are not rolling, then I guess you see the real person, which with very few people have ever had the privilege of doing so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great day.
No, you knew him and know him, Harry. He's a great bloke, actually, really. And you know, supremely talented. One of the very best there will ever be. I firmly believe. But actually, like you say, behind the scenes, we've been fortunate enough to experience that a few times. He's a cracking guy.
No, he was.
Anyway, Harry, it's about you. Harry's Garage, it's a phenomenal success. I mean, you've got millions of subscribers and, you know, each video gets galactic numbers. Where did it all begin? What was the catalyst?
My meanness, really, is when I was running magazine and this annoying thing called video came along and we did print magazines and websites and stuff. And I just thought, video, we ought to do video. We've got to do video. But back, that was 2009-10. It was really getting going. And I couldn't make it work because you have a stills photographer. You had one photographer who did the magazine, and the magazine came first. And then if you wanted to do video, you had to send someone else out to do the video. And it cost a load of money. And you got no income from it as well. And people watched the free video and not the magazine. So that it was a hard balancing act. And I thought, well, if I get invited to do amazing things, if I just stick a camera on the windscreen and yabber on a bit, it's cost nothing.
Yeah.
And therefore, no photographer, no nothing. And it didn't seem to make any difference to the views in our experience. If you were experiencing that moment when that Zonda 750 RS lit up and you were in screen, wobbly, no one cared. They were there in the moment. So I sort of pursued it from that. And it was, and then I sort of got into it because I sold the magazines in 2013 and I went behind the scenes at JLR because I'd done this pitch. I said to Dr. Speff that great company and that, but aren't you missing a trick without having an AMG and M power type division doing the exclusive stuff? I can see this is going to get more and more important. But don't think you only have to chase performance. What everybody wants is personalization and special paint jobs and luxury. You know, the trouble with AMG and M, they could only do performance. I said, everything's got to be performance now. So I'd done this pitch and he got me in and set up SVO and doing all that. But after a few years, I was missing the action of the, you know, what I used to do and seeing at the coal phase what was coming next, the excitement. So I just thought, maybe I ought to just carry on doing one or two videos. And that was, 10 years ago to almost a couple of weeks ago now.
Wow.
So, first video.
Well, I mean, it's been a phenomenal success, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, I suppose so. It was lockdown that really did it. Lockdown just went wallop for anyone doing it. And then it's just the routine, you know. I do it weekly. Sometimes I think, oh, I'll back off. And then I get... So I think, I can't wait to tell someone about this thing. Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah. So I ended up doing it weekly. And that was, there was an MD of JLR. I was at, the motor show in the US. And he had to go on stage live right across America to explain what it's a Range Rover Sport. He was about to launch the sort of concept for that. And I said, aren't you, how the nerves? He said, no nerves. Just can't wait to tell the world about this car. I just can't wait. And he stormed on. I thought, and it was just a lesson that if you're passionate, you can't wait to tell your viewers about this car. There's no nerves, no nothing. You're just, you're there for the moment.
Yeah,
yeah.
You
yeah.
won't believe good. This. Bloody Aston, I can't believe it. Yeah, so that's...
You're just doing your thing, aren't you? And, yeah, and that's joyous. Joyous.
It is, isn't it, really? Because, you know, you try to explain to people how you present. I didn't know I could present. I don't think I can, but I can't wait to tell you about this thing.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what the thing is, Harry? Then sort of Jason was sort of tongue-in-cheek joking about it in the intro, but how does it feel when people... Because, you know, they must describe you as being a YouTuber. And as I say, we joke because we think about YouTubers being kids and stuff like that, you know, and none of us are that age anymore. But how does it feel to be kind of, you know, you are a YouTube sensation. There's no getting away from that.
It's so odd. I think it's a brilliant medium. I'll go on to that in a moment. But I've been very lucky to win a couple of gongs, and the first one as Influencer of the Year. And I get the organizer.
Fantastic. Say, I love that.
Are you all right doing this? Yeah, well, we call it Influencer of the Year, but you've voted the top. Are you all right? And I said, well, I don't know. It's just I like gongs. I like a good, so no problem with me. So it's just the medium, isn't it? I just look at YouTube as the paper magazines, it was very restrictive. I look back on what we were doing in the magazine. It was a global magazine, Evo, but that does mean you're sending 20-odd tons of paper to the US each month, and then that gets distributed around the US, and you don't get returns, as it's termed, to know how many you've sold.
Yeah.
Until about 3 or 4 months after you sent the first lot over, and you don't get paid until about 10 or 11 months after that magazine. So the tail
on round one,
you go to Australia, that's just the same. And it's a bit of a clunky way of being a global, sort of getting the story out there and time sensitive. YouTube, I just now look as just magic.
Isn't it?
Yeah, do the edit. Post it up there, click, and make it public, and it's global instantly.
And it never
goes off sale. That's the other really nice thing. So if you've like taking a Testarossa to the Sahara Desert, it's always there in the top 50, just giving a little bit at the end. So it's like royalties for bands or something like that. It just never goes off sale, and then you just carry on doing videos and stuff, you know.
So it is, no pun intended here, but it is a natural evolution to what you were doing, obviously, in the print world.
I see it as that. The only bit I really miss is that it's not really a team sport. I describe it as like being a columnist almost. You put your views across. But there was something magic. It must be like with when you go racing, Jason. It's everyone involved in that mechanics, and you're doing it for everyone, aren't you? And you're there, and you feel responsible for the other guys there because they put their heart in it. I'm going to bloody get this.
Absolutely.
I miss that team bit. That's the only thing, the negative I can think of. Everything else is pretty positive.
No, it totally makes sense. And actually, we also have to remember that as well as being, there can't be many people that actually tick these two boxes that I've seen, Jason, as well as being a massive YouTuber, you are, of course, a full-time farmer as well. You know, and as I say, very few people fit into, imagine like the Venn diagrams, you know, when they intersect, there's not many people that have farming and YouTube, and you sit right in the middle.
No.
Now, you know, we spoke actually the other day, and you know, when you kindly agreed to come on here, because obviously it's all about the weather and farming is all to do with the weather, and part of the reason we're talking now is because it's a decent weather and you've got a bit of a break. How do you balance the two very all-consuming and demanding lifestyles? Presumably the farm has to take priority just, I suppose, does it, over the cars in the garage?
Yeah, in a little way. I always say I am a farmer and everything else has been a mistake, really. all the rest is by accident. But farming is peculiar. But it just covers too many bases. There's being a livestock farmer in the Lake District, me and Cotswold doing a bit of arable, it's completely different.
Yeah.
So it's too wide a spread of words. So you have your peaks when it is very busy. And then there's other times where it's horribly quiet. It's how I got into magazines, really, because I didn't actually shoot, which is what farmers go off and do, some October round to about end of January shooting season, because there's nothing else to do on the farm. So I used to help out Walter Express, Performance Car, just on group tests. But I used to go along as a so-called safe pair of hands and, you know, muck in, do the group test, disappear off. So that's actually how the Evo sort of started.
Right,
So I managed it, and now I managed it very carefully. So, I came out of college with an HND in agriculture and came as a grain buyer, but I always wanted to get the other side of the fence. So, like when I set up Evo, I'd taken land everywhere. I was renting all sorts of ground. It was about 2,000 acres or something.
Mm. Oh, wow.
I couldn't run 2,000 acres and run the magazine. And there was a moment I thought, yeah, I'm going to do this, do the mag. And then realized just the money I was spending, and I've said this before, but there was one, I was spraying a field and on the phone, hands-free in the cab, 98, and agreed to buy £45,000 worth of computer equipment. And I remember just the end of the call for, this is quite serious, this is really, like 98. And that would have bought a pretty fancy car. I think I paid, my Ghibli Cup was 42,000. So more than my Maserati, I just bought on computer for some blokes that I used to muck about in lay-by. Well, that sounds awful. You've been on a group test, you spend an awful long time in lay-bys, but you know what I mean.
I've been to those lay-bys. Nothing to see.
Nothing to see there.
It's not very glamorous. Quite often, the shoot.
Evening, Mr. Plato, your usual spot.
Yeah. Oh, hello, Harry. Fancy seeing you here again. It's so true, isn't it? It's so unglamorous. I mean, you know, Dave, you've been on shoots. There's a lot of standing around. There's a lot of dicking around. There's a lot of, for just a little short bit on the roads.
Yeah,
But it's fun, though. It's great fun.
It is. And it's one of my pet things at Evo. I refused to show photographs. People used to say, oh, can you drive that car? Photographers say, go and drive that, go and go down there to go to that shop. And they'd have all the coats on and look like they'd been gone to the Arctic and they're in this fantastic car. No one is allowed to wear a coat in the car. You've got to look as though you've been in it hours, and you're cool. Don't wear a coat, otherwise that photograph does not get used.
Brilliant.
Harry, let's go back to the beginning then, I think. Yes. What are your earliest petrol-related memories for you? What first stirred something inside you when it comes to cars and bikes? Because I know you're very much into both, aren't you?
Very much, yeah, bikes. It actually did start with bikes. So, my parents had we had this great cottage. We lived in the Wirral, so Birkenhead. I'm from Birkenhead, Scotland.
That's where all my dad's family from.
Oh, is he? Oh, right.
My dad's family were all from Prenton originally, and then they moved out to Eastham. And then my grandma lived in Eastham. I had family in Bromborough. We used to go to Hoy Lake and Neston and whatnot and Parkgate for a day out.
Yeah, and West Kirby and Calder. West Kirby. Really posh, you know, meet the really nice girls. They were over there.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was a posh side of the world, the D side. That was,
Oxford. We're getting very local. Anyway, there. But we had a place the parents bought a place in Wales, cottage, no running water, nothing. But it was in the middle of this forest, and there were forest tracks around it. And I asked for a horse stupidly because my grandfather and my dad, he was a horse trader in Yorkshire, farmer up there, and did all this horse trading. So I thought, I might get a decent horse. Knew nothing about horses, and opened the shed, motorbike in there. He says, you don't want a horse, mate. And so I got, 50 quid. It was a Kerry, a little 50cc thing that I then used to scream around the woods and then got another bike. And so, you had to make them work, really. The bikes, maintenance was a big thing. So that's how I sort of, it was my escape, going around the woods and mucking about. And then,
how much fun does that sound, eh?
It was heavy because it was brilliant. Proper steep land as well. So I the bikes were perfect, absolutely perfect. Mm. And then, because you'd just put them in a shed and disappear for a few weeks and come back and kick it into life and off you went again.
Yeah.
So, that was my early memories. And then my dad was into Citroens and things. So, sort of slightly quirky. We had a Diane 6.
Right.
We used to go out to the college. I tried to get him to get a Range Rover. He was horrified at the fuel consumption, so we're not having one of those.
Proper farmer then.
We're not doing that. We had a really aggressive track down to this cottage. It really was pretty basic. And so some friends used to have to park about half a mile away and they'd arrive sort of walking down. And it's just mad, really. But Saabs did rallies. So we had these Saab 96, had the two-stroke and 850 two-stroke. I remember going in the back of that. We went all the way to Yugoslavia in it. And he used to go on these
good
European
Lord.
Tours. He's a, you know, he had a university, polytechnic fashion school was what he was involved with. So we had these huge, long summer holidays, basically. So we used to drive off right into Europe, all over the place. Yeah, so that's my memories.
There's one of those two-stroke Saabs not far from me, actually. The guy lives literally about 5-10 miles away, and he gets out in the summer, and you can hear him coming a mile away. It's fantastic.
It's mad.
Great thing.
I remember being in the Grosgrotner. My dad had oiled up the plugs, and we were having to take the plugs out and stuff. And I used to have to sit in the back, and there was all these cans of oil, two-stroke oil, in the footwell. Just mad, looking back.
Oh, see, now you've got me... My memory's going. Castle R30 and R40, the smell. Oh, joyous.
Yeah, there we are. So that's the very early days. And then, I got a bit naughty because we were right in the middle of nowhere in North Wales. And I used to turn the cars round for people. And then I used to accidentally go a bit further up the track. And then, I might as well turn up by, the farmer up the road. And then so I was a bit naughty, as we all were back then, really, and did a little bit of driving, got into cars like that.
What was your first car, Harry? Your first owned car?
My first owned car was actually that Diane 6. So I got I then somehow swapped it into an MGB GT that I drove about 5 miles and thought, not for me.
The V8, the V8 one?
No, unfortunately not. No, I don't know why. Anyway, I got out of that within seconds, and then got into Beatles and tweaking Beatles, which I'm slightly embarrassed about looking back.
That was my first car.
Oh, was it a Beatle? Yeah.
I've had two, actually. Yeah.
All right.
I loved them. They were great. I mean, they were shit in the winter because the heaters never worked and you'd have ice on the windscreen. But they were great.
They were okay if you tweak them, because then you were, I was about 1750 or 1760 cc, and therefore the heater worked better because they produced more heat. I was very jealous. I listened to that while you did with James May and his Beach Buggy. I always wanted the Beach Buggy. One of his, I think. Go and get that out of the system. But I enjoyed the Beatles days. I had motorbikes as well. So that was the other thing.
I guess it's about the simplicity, isn't it? You know, what with the bikes and with stuff like that in those days. You know, with the Diane and also with the Beetle. You know, you could fix them, couldn't you?
Had to, on my budget. I was always fixing them. So that really got me into understood motors and stuff, from those early days. I was going to be, and I put in to be an automotive engineer at Loughborough. That was what I was trained to do. And I didn't get physics A-level and I couldn't go. So Dad said, you're going to do something. So he put me into an agricultural college and just had a time of my life. Just mucking about.
Brilliant.
And thought, this is the life. If I can get into this, that'd be great. So, I went and did that.
Well, I must say, it turned out all right, hasn't it?
Didn't it?
I always say, people ask me, how do you get into publishing? And, what's the best route in? I said, well, go to agriculture college, you learn everything.
A quick bit of mid-show housekeeping, folks. If you haven't already, please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from so you can never miss an episode. Or you can watch the whole thing right now on YouTube. So let's get into the juicy stuff then, please, Harry. What does the entire fleet consist of currently? This is what people want to know. It's all about Harry's garage, and you've got some beautiful stuff in there. I'm talking cars, bikes, the lot. Run us through it.
Oh, there's so much. It's just
give us the highlights at least.
On your introduction, you said he's a car collector. No, I'm not really. I'm just useless at selling cars. I just end up. One of the downsides of being a farmer, you have sheds, and if you don't actually ever run out of room, which is a disaster. But there are quite a few. I do. Yeah, there are some of the same. I have everything. I was out yesterday. I've got this Rolls Royce Silver Shadow that I bought off eBay, and I just adore it. It's so... I like a garage that has completely different tastes in cars. There is a different sensation from riding that thing, that wild thing over there. So I adore my Silver Shadow, just the ease. It just goes through. You can't really hear the engine. I had to go to an event in London a couple of weeks ago, and it's at the Peninsula, which is just about the poshest hotel now in London. And I'll take the Shad, because that's my that just floats in traffic, doesn't care monkeys about speed bumps, 20 mile an hour. It's just easy. And I thought, God, I can't park it. And they were all over it. There was a queue of people to valet park this Silver Shadow. So anyway, so it goes from that. And then what else we got? I mean, our most recent addition, I've got a McLaren, actually. I've got a 650S that, again, I just adore as well. I can't get over. Why didn't I get this earlier? There's the carbon tub, the steering feel, the lightning power, the ease of graphics, how the as a driver you are central to that experience. The view out of the window is glorious. And it's a joy from a completely different spectrum.
It's a very special car, McLaren, isn't it? They make really great cars. I had a 750S for filming.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, joyous. But literally communicative, just great.
They've got all the basics right. That's what I love about McLaren. Just, you know, and you get in another car. Why is that so wrong? I was in the Aston Martin Vantage, new Vantage, and I actually couldn't wait to get back into the McLaren after it. There was the high bustle, this overpower, this sort of front engine car trying to be a sort of GT3-esque, and it was just everything
was
overegged. It's just like there's the wrong starting point to try and compete on that level. Anyway, so that's what I'm giving away, what the conclusion is. But yeah, I love the McLaren for that.
Have you still got the Countach?
I've literally just come back from Italy from it. I've just done 2,000 miles in it and took it down. There's lots of highlights, actually, but the big one, I went to Germany and did a de-restricted Autobahn in the Countach.
Oh, wow.
When I first got it.
Hello.
I got it in 2010, and I did a story out in Italy, got Octane to drive it out there. I did a story with Valentino on best Countach, and we got 5 Countachs together. And did a drive back from the factory, and we did the shoot on a Saturday. This is ridiculous, but I was staying in Cap Ferrat. This is slightly name-dropping that evening, and I left Lamborghini at about 6. And I can remember just going along, there's a Autostrada south of Milan that is quite, we've done some quite quick stuff there. And this thing was so stable. I've never really had it at 140, 150 mile an hour. Yeah. It was like, oh, bloody hell, this is good. And then I thought, I'm living this life that I can't believe. I'm driving from Lamborghini factory to Cap Ferrat in France on a Saturday night.
I mean, it doesn't get any better, does it?
It's like jumping straight into an Athena poster from the 80s, isn't it? Yeah. Because, I mean, that was, you know, for mere mortals like me, that was the 80s poster car.
Yeah, you know, I had it on my wall.
Absolutely, you know, but it was a fantasy thing, wasn't it? You know, this was a fantasy car which you own in your collection, and there you are, sort of hammering through the Autostradas.
Yeah, so that was then. I remember doing another story of that Countach. It was Lamborghini 50th, way out to the factory, did that, and it was suddenly unstable at speed. It wasn't quite as good, and I thought, is my memory playing tricks? Anyway, on this trip, it's all had the chassis redone. They've got rose joint suspension on a Countach, and you have to keep right on top of it to keep it pointing. Yeah, yeah. It's got toe in front and rear. It was stable as anything, beautiful at speed.
Was it?
And I've 35,000 kilometres in it now. Can't believe it.
Have you really?
Yeah. In the last year, I've been all over it. And Patricia, she says it's the most comfortable car. No one would tell you this, you know. No one on a forum. Oh, they're terrible. Worst seats ever. Oh, there's no room in them. Don't know. I've got on extremely well with my Countach. Had such a joy. Some amazing times in it. Yeah, I've been out. I was at Ferruccio Lamborghini's, his winery. So I actually parked up the same place he used to park his Countach up at his farm. So that video is coming out a couple of weeks.
Well, do you know what? That tells me, particularly about the rose joints, that tells me that you look after them properly. Hence, why they give you great service.
Yeah, well,
they're enjoyable to drive.
Yeah, if you ever see the garage, I always park so I can drive any of them out. I think it's the biggest mistake is when you enter this car and you have to move one to get to another. They're just lined up, and I'm just kidding, sweet shot. I just wander up to the garage and say, oh, I can't believe this. I can't. Testarossa. Testarossa isn't as exciting, shall we say, as a Countach, but it's a better car. I love that flat 12, and I think that was just a time in Ferrari's history. That is a mad engine. It's not that it's got no stiffness in the chassis. It's not sort of, you know, not going to set a lap time or anything, but it is a sensation when you're in it.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that one. My God, that Jaguar, Jag Coupe, which is a bit mad. That's V12 manual, so like a steed car. But I want to put the fat arches on it because you actually see them up close. They look a bit overwrought. And so I just wanted plain Jane, but that engine is extraordinary. There's Tom Lemphill, who does Jaguars, has tweaked that. It's got a strict injection system on it.
Oh, has it?
Why is that thing? But it's manual. Yeah, Jag Coupe. What else is there? Oh, the P7 and P8, Jaguar Project 7, Project 8. I think Jaguar F-Type, I think, will come back. I just think people don't realize it's like our modern Cobra. It's our British version of a Cobra. V8 supercharged engine, two-wheel drive, those early ones for about 30 grand. That's just mad money to me for the enjoyment.
Yes.
And then the Project 8, I only drive it really on track. I hardly do much with it these days, but I just love that this 200 mile an hour crazy Jaguar will see off an averagely driven GT3 or something, and I'm in this four-door Jag that just amuses me.
So it's great.
Carry on with that one.
What time are we going to arrive there, Dave, this afternoon? What time should we get up to the garage and have a little play?
I was just thinking, actually, the thought crossed my mind as well, Jason, because Harry said before, he goes, if you ever see the garage, and I kind of thought, I'm not sure about the if here. I'm kind of thinking more like the when you see the garage, because I think we should come and do a special feeling around, maybe live from Harry's garage. I think that would be a good one.
Well, I'll bring the motor home, and we can stay the week.
Well, there you go. We'll stay for a couple of weeks or something. Joking aside, Harry, when you've got that many toys in the garage, and as you rightly said, you said, you know, you feel like a kid in a sweet shop. The practicalities of that, is that not a sort of full-time job, almost keeping on top of them in terms of what they all need from, you know, they need to be run every so often, they need oil changes, they need different things. You know, there's a maintenance schedule as well in this, is there not? And on top of, obviously, what you do YouTube-wise and the farming-wise.
Yes, there is. I think there's 35 or 40 out there that I have to look after. And I've been found out on this Countach to Italy because its MOT ran out in May. So I've had about 4,000 or 5,000 messages. So do you know your MOT ran out? So sorry, guilty as charged, very sorry. But you do have to. I quite like when they go historic. If you get the classic cars, once they go historic and then no MOTs, no road tax, you feel like you've escaped the system.
What age is that, by the way, Harry?
Well, it's 40 years. So it's now, I think it's 84, isn't it? So in 3 years' time, it continues. The Countach will go historic. And I just think that's mad. So once
you're mental, isn't it?
Yeah, once you get to that stage, it's really very good. But what else is there? I mean, there's the bike. I did this Dakar collection. I've always, because of the upbringing, I've just into off-road bikes. I've never got road bikes. I've got a Honda CBX, which is a six-cylinder one, and I've got a Kawasaki triple two-stroke as well, which is real favourites. Anyway, where am I going? But so I've got Dakar bikes. I just find that period of racing, I remember watching Dakar. It was Eurosport again because you're farming.
Yeah, me too.
January, it's just after Christmas. You just thought, that is truly mad. Them racing across the desert like that. And the Group B cars, when they got banned from rally, they obviously were in.
Yes.
Dakar rally. Grandfather clock going off. I don't know if you can hear that.
I thought that might have been the alarm to say that the Countach need an oil change.
It's 12 o'clock, so you've got the whole lot. That's it. That's what happened.
I tell you what, you don't want to be doing a cam belt change at a Countach. That's a big job, isn't it?
Well, it's changed, so it's all right.
Perfect.
But funny enough, Countach has been ridiculous. I did a gearbox on it. I had to rebuild the gearbox. It was getting noisy. But what else is there in the garage? I did little Lotus Elan Sprint. That was something that I always dreamt of having. And then I used to do these hill climbing sprints back in mid-90s, got an Elan. And the quicker and more extreme I made it for hill climbing, the worse it became as a road car. So I just wanted to make the perfect Elan Sprint road car. So, yeah, I built that up in 94, 95. So that's my longest owned car in the garage. There's a Elan Sprint. I was out in that yesterday as well.
I guess this is maybe an impossible question to ask. I mean, is there a favourite or is it like kids? You know, you can't really have a favourite.
It is a little bit like that, I have to say. I did think, I wonder if he asked me which one I'd like. I always say the one that's got the most fuel in it or something. But just from the mileage and the use, the three I've mentioned, it's a toss-up between the Rolls-Royce for being what it is, the Countach, and the McLaren for the modern one. So if I got to drive it lots, the McLaren is this breath of fresh air. It just works. It's modern, but it hasn't got any of the nonsense we've got in 24, this speed stuff and, you know, in my drives, a 20-mile-an-hour drive and telling me off for doing 20 miles an hour and I'm driving up to the farm buildings that I hate and the lane, departure. None of that. So it's sort of simple, but it's sort of modern. The Countach, because it is that dream, no way would I ever think I'd own a Countach. No way would I think I'd just drive to Germany or Italy and come back. That's just dreamy. And I would dearly miss it. I know. It's just a life experience. So I just can't pinch myself. I don't know, really. And then they'll land a simple. So I've got to use one. It would probably be the Countach would be the last one. Dangerous thing, but it probably would be.
But you know what's funny? Because those three cars there, sort of three more different vehicles in one garage you couldn't find, you know, from the Silver Shadow to the Countach and to the McLaren. I mean, they are poles apart, but that's what's so lovely about, you know, your collection, if I can call it that, because it is so diverse and so different, and they all do different things. So I guess my question to you, Harry, is away from the exotica, as somebody who loves cars and is into their cars, what's the daily drive? What takes you to Waitrose? Because it's not going to be the Countach, is it?
No. I've kept a Range Rover. I've had a Range Rover since 1990. So that has been the default. But the modern one is getting a bit too posh and not quite there. So I have an L322, so 2006 Range Rover. There. There is that. And I also, it's very boring. My wife has got a Panda 4x4 that I bought because the Range Rover in 2002 she felt was too big and couldn't park it places. I said, well, we'll get a tender. We'll get this Panda 4x4. And it was $7,500 new in 2001. It's still here. I cannot get it out of this Panda 4x4. And Fiat are just brilliant at doing small cars that just were, did all the school runs. She's in it. Oh, no, she's taking something else. But, she just... It just worked. I can't get over. There's no rust on it. There's no nothing. Yeah. How's that? You know, it's nearly 20 years old. And she was telling this story of this about a Panda 4x4, this silver Panda 4x4 that pulled up outside next to the Countach out in Val d'Orcher, obviously, a couple of weeks ago. And he said, my car's done 200,000 kilometres. And he says, mine's done 306,000 kilometres.
Perfect. Fantastic.
So, they're just the perfect Italian car that you never know if it's the landowner driving around in it or not. The Panda 4x4 is exceptional.
Well, I've got a pal that's trying to buy as many of those as he can because they're doing some rally raids in them, I think, in Morocco.
Yes.
And they're really sought after.
Yeah, they are.
Because they're bomb-proof, aren't they?
Yeah, weirdly, it's independent. Yeah. We've done a couple of stories at Evo where we tried to see what was the best 0-60 time we get the Fiat Panda to. And it was one, I had a car trailer. So basically I was using crazy things to tow this car trailer. It was the G-Wagon, G55, that got the highest speed. Put it up to about 115, 120, I think, up at Santa Pod, which wasn't a big run where he got a bit of braking. And some Roger Green, one of the guys at Evo, he says, I wonder what it's like in the Panda. And he sat in the Panda on the trailers, and I'm doing 120. So he said, it's the most
horrifying thing. Good Lord.
To race radicals and stuff, wasn't it? Yeah. Oh, dear.
So, he's off his head, isn't he? He sounds like it.
That was mental. that was wasn't quite right after that.
Hey, so here's a question for Harry. I mean, we tend to ask all our guests this because we believe that music and cars, it's a perfect match, isn't it? So if you think about what would be your ultimate fantasy drive, so, you know, where are you, where are you going, what are you listening to, and most importantly, what are you in? Could be anything.
Right.
Maybe an itch you've not scratched.
Well, there's a slight surprise there I'll come to in a moment. If the most magical time I've had in my motoring career is actually I do something called Sand Raiders once a year, and that's on the bikes, and we relive those early days of Dakar. And I've been in Morocco, and I've just been in vistas and places I just can't believe. And I've been, they call them lakes, and you might have 40, 50 kilometres there, and you're flat out across this vast, like, sort of Bonneville salt flat, but it's sort of sand and crusty, and there's just the escapism. I do it with my son, and with a pair of us caning and just weaving, you just think, this is just unbelievable. You are, you have to have a fantastic bike and have a little bit of ability to get to these places. It might be 200 kilometers from the nearest road, and then you're, whoa, thinking, this
oh my God, wow.
So that is my breathtaking. That is my most magic moment, is there. But on music, the weirdness, music has never played any part of my life. I don't listen to music. I've never downloaded anything. I just don't do.
Wow.
I've never been to a concert.
That's interesting.
I can remember buying, my dad didn't do record play, he thought they were old fashioned, so he had a tape player. But I can remember buying Alice Cooper's Schools Out album because I thought it was cool. He got a pair of paper knickers around the LP. And I thought it was odd, sort of, Pink Floyd stuff. Bizarre, isn't it? And I was worried he might ask me about music. It just does play no part in my life at all.
Well, that's absolutely fine.
I like
podcasts. Yeah, it is absolutely fine.
I like Radio 4. I listen to Radio 4. I like debate, all sorts of things. I like Sport Live. I love listening to Sport Live on the radio when I'm in the tractor or on a journey. Listening to, racing, F1. I don't, it's just music, never.
Well, listen, Harry, on your fantasy trip across Morocco, across those lakes of sand, you can listen to old episodes of Fueling Around from yesteryear with myself and Jason talking ballads with a whole range of different special guests.
And that could keep you going for thousands of miles, non-stop.
Of miles of waffle through the sands.
Yeah.
It sounds almost dreamy. Do you know what, Jason? I think on that note, I think you need to take us out.
Well, sadly, that is it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, big thanks. But a massive, huge thanks to our special guest this week, the one and only Mr. Harry Metcalf. Thanks, pal.
Thank you. It's been great.
Thank you, Harry. It's been a real pleasure having you on. Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify now or wherever you get your podcast from.
Thanks for listening, folks. And, we'll see you next time. Ta-da.